Well, good morning. For those who don't know me, I'm Ryan Leonards, and I'm a team pastor here at Ashworth. And today, we just got to have a great flashback to 1994 with the number 11 best-selling song all time, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And when I say all time, that's not Christmas songs. This is the number 11 best-selling song in the world ever. And I find that incredible. But who doesn't love that catchy tune and that incredible, like, homemade video that was actually captured in her own home? As you listen to the words of that song, All I Want for Christmas Is You, you hear about how Mariah Carey has only one thing that can make her happy for Christmas. She doesn't care about the presents. She doesn't care about the stockings. She doesn't even care about Santa Claus. But what she wants for Christmas is you, baby. And that's as much singing as I'm going to do for you folks. I mean, really what we see is it's a love song that she wrote where she won't be content with anything except her love showing up for Christmas. And it's really sweet, but it's a lie. Because you see, the problem is, whether her love shows up for Christmas or not, we all know that in the real world, it's only going to take him a few weeks or days, or if he's really not careful at all, a couple of hours, before he ruins this perfect aura of how amazing he is. He's going to say something, or he's going to do something, and she's going to be like, oh, well, that I wasn't very much appreciated. Like this relationship that she's saying, this is the one relationship that's going to make me so happy. You complete me. He's going to come and he's going to show up and she's going to realize, oh, you kind of made me happy in the moment. Like we had a great kiss and a great bonding time right there. But then we have to live together and do life together and it gets hard. It's like when you get married and you're going into that day, you're convinced that that marriage is going to make you the happiest person ever, every moment of every day from then till forever. But for those of us who've been married for more than a week, we understand that that's not how life necessarily works. Because life happens and hard things come, and challenges occur, and conflicts build, and all of a sudden that person that you thought, I will be in eternal bliss with them, you're like, wait, I want to be in eternal bliss, but why are we arguing? Why is this so hard? Why do I not feel this incredible satisfaction and joy that I thought I was supposed to feel because I'm with you? So to bring some people to bring joy back into their lives, because maybe that marriage isn't working, that relationship isn't fulfilling, maybe you then take a vacation that you dreamed about, or you buy your first house together, or you have a child together, because then I can have that child that I'll love, and I'll have somewhere to put my love and somebody to return that love to me, and everything will be better. And again, for a moment, you're so excited. Like, oh, now I have that happiness again. But the vacation comes to an end, or the house has unforeseen maintenance needs that you're like, oh my goodness, this is a money pit. And that child requires all of your free time for the next 18 years. And you're like, wow, this is really hard. Again, this joy I thought I would receive from time with these people on vacation or from this child isn't giving me the inside joy the way that I expected. It's kind of like hopes dashed because you're thinking that this will fix everything for me in life. But we find out whatever it is we're putting our hope in, none of that truly fixes it all. And so the point I'm trying to make is that Mariah Carey can say all she wants for Christmas is you, but we all know she really wants a lot more than just him. And even if she gets it all, she still won't be happy for the long term. Because as I said, ironically, this video was filmed in her home and the guy dressed up as Santa Claus was her husband. And the man that all she wanted for Christmas was him, she divorced 3 years later. And the marriage fell apart. And he wasn't the one who could carry the freight of making her happy for an entire lifetime. But Mariah isn't the only one who falls into this trap. We do all these same things when we set our hearts on that one thing or that one relationship that we have to make us happy. If only I can get a raise, or I can find new love, or I can receive the praise of other people for a job well done, or I can if only I can get a spouse or a spouse who shows more affection towards me, if only that, or maybe if only I can get a child or a pony or whatever it is, you name it. We base our happiness on the hope of attaining the one important thing that we don't yet have. And then when we reach that goal, or we find that love, or we purchase that item, we experience truly an incredible joy normally. It's rare that we're like, oh, that kind of totally stunk. Normally we're like, yes, this is it. I'm so happy now. And we go to bed with such joy in our hearts. And we wake up the next morning and the joy has already started to fade just a little bit. And we all know this is what happens. That contentment fades over time. That joy is for a moment. And then we're off to chase something else that is going to make us happy once that joy completely fades. We go find something else and we find ourselves in this vicious cycle of, I need that, so I'm going to go get it. I need love from this person, I'm going to go get it. Well, this isn't fulfilling. If only I have that, I'll go get it. And we keep moving around chasing and chasing and chasing. And all of it is for nothing. And it's a cycle that we need to break. Today I want to share with you some wisdom from the Bible that will hopefully help you break out of that cycle of endlessly chasing things for happiness, only to find that they don't ever keep you happy. And so today I want to read to you from the wise teacher who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. It's in the middle of the Bible, a little bit after Psalms. And in this book, the teacher is nearing the end of his life. He's lived a long life. He's experienced a lot of things. And he's essentially wrestling with the meaning of life. And let me read to you what he wrote about his search as he's looking for the meaning of life. In chapter 2, beginning in halfway through verse 3, I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delight of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Wow, the end of that passage is pretty powerful, isn't it? This guy has tried to do everything to fill that void of joy, contentment, satisfaction in his heart. And at the end of the matter, he says, he denied himself nothing his eyes desired, and yet, when he surveyed all that he had done, he found it to be meaningless. None of it had any lasting fulfillment. None of it made any difference in the long term. It didn't give him the everlasting joy. I'm sure he had joy in the moment. Like, yeah, who doesn't love building up their house and making it nice, or seeing a garden, or bringing in food that you grew yourself and making a delicious meal? All those things, you're like, yeah, this is great. But when you look back, does any of it make a difference? Or is it all just momentary joy? And even though all he wants for Christmas, he essentially already got, he got it for himself, he tells us at the end of his life, all of it is meaningless. Now, I share this passage with you because when you break it down, the teacher is telling us how his dreams are so very much like our own. First, he wanted a beautiful home. He worked on his house, and he tried to make it gorgeous on the inside and on the outside with the garden and the trees and the vineyards. And he brought in tons of servants to wait on him hand and foot. He wanted that personal pampering and comfort. He wanted to just feel like there were people there that wanted his life to be easy. And I'm sure that it was. And I know some of you dream about this being a reality. If only somebody could come and clean the whole house and do all the laundry and just massage my back for an hour. That's all I need to get through today. Have any of you thought that before? I'm sure. Am I the only one? I'm the cleaner in the house. Yeah, I would love somebody to come clean my house for me. He had more herds and flocks, silver and gold than anyone else. He had this incredible wealth. He got the pay raise. He met his retirement goal. He hit the lottery, essentially, all the things that we might dream about. He was absolutely loaded. And he says it was meaningless. He enjoyed the beautiful singers entertaining him in the dining room and the beautiful harem entertaining him in the bedroom. He had the delights of a man's heart. And he says, even that wasn't the love that I desired. And finally, he was greater in status and wisdom than anyone else. He had everyone's respect. Everyone knew him, respected him, and loved him. And yet, after chasing all these dreams that we so commonly chase in some form or another, I mean, when I look at that list, I can check off almost all those that I've thought, yeah, if I could have this thing, then I would be happier. If only I had this one thing here, that is what I'm looking for. But he's done it. He's accomplished it all. He's met the status, the accomplishments. And he's got the relationships with people and the respect, and he knows that none of that makes him happy for all of life. And we understand that too. When we really look at the lives we've lived and the things we've chased, most of us understand, yeah, I see that. I've gone after this thing, and then when I caught it, I didn't know what to do with it. Like, it was great, and I enjoyed it, but it didn't fix anything in the long run. And yet, for some reason, we're still in this trap, even though we know it, we don't know it, because our heart continues to go and chase after more and more. And well, maybe this relationship with this person, maybe if only my husband would do this for me, then I would be happier. Well, if only my child did this, then I would be happier. Maybe if I found a friend and we could go out, then I would be happier. And we're trying to find happiness in all these different people in all these different places. Because our heart keeps leading us there, thinking that that's somehow how we're going to find the happiness. But we keep trying, and I sometimes wonder, why do we do that? Why do we keep trying when we really know better? And I think the answer is in Jeremiah 17:9. This is really a verse I love because it speaks so concisely to the problem that we have as fallen humans. And this is Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is deceitful above all things, and beyond cure, who can understand it? I think that that's really good wisdom. Your heart is a liar. When your heart tells you, if only I had this, it's lying to you. You can get it, you can achieve it, or buy it, or find that relationship and marry it. And guess what? Weeks or months or years later, the joy that you thought it would give you for a lifetime fades, and you're going to be left chasing something else. Our hearts lead us on this wild goose chase all through life. It's our sick and sinful hearts that make us think that we need all these things. And so we chase around and around, and it really is a chasing after the wind. Because like a dog who catches its tail and they just look at it, they don't know what to do, so they let it go, and they start chasing their tail again. And that's what we do. We chase this, we chase that. We're looking for happiness in all these places, all these people, all these things, and we're never actually finding true satisfaction. That's essentially the teacher from Ecclesiastes' story. He's saying, I chased after everything, the comfortable home, the garden, the pampering, the pleasure, the riches, the respect. And even though he got everything he wanted, he was not satisfied. And sadly, it took him until the very end of his life to realize that none of these things could possibly satisfy him. And that's why at the end of this book, he wrote one final instruction. This book is written to his son, but it's one final instruction that all of us can take away. In the last verse here, Ecclesiastes 12:13, he wrote, "Now all has been heard." I've explained all this through the book of how everything is meaningless. "Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind." Essentially, he's recognizing that nothing in this life, apart from a relationship with God, can ever truly make you happy in any kind of a lasting way. And we see this idea then carried over. It's not just in the wisdom literature that I'm preaching out of, though I do love Ecclesiastes. It's the most marked up book in my Bible. But we carry this over into the New Testament, and we see it with Jesus. In John chapter 4, Jesus gives us some specific instructions about where we are to go to find satisfaction. And in John 4, what we read about is a woman who, Jesus meets this Samaritan woman hated at a well. There's a lot of storylines and aspects to this story that maybe you've heard taught before. But I want to focus on one verse or one little idea that comes from verses 13 through 14. Here Jesus, leading up to this verse, Jesus mentions to this woman as they're having this conversation that he has, as they're at this well, pulling up water for the day, he says he has living water. And the woman asks him where she can get this living water. And this is how Jesus responds in verse 13. Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." In this one statement, Jesus is telling us what we already know, that no matter how much we try to fill up our hearts with joy and contentment, we will always be thirsty for that feeling again. That feeling of there's got to be more will always, always come back. Just like that woman has to go back to that well every single day to pull up more water. We have to go looking for happiness in a new place over and over again. Our spirits will always eventually become dry again, and we'll thirst for something new. So we have to keep going back to that well, looking, hopefully trying to find peace and joy. And Jesus is saying, stop chasing after the wind. Chase after me. That's what he's telling her in this. He's saying, break the cycle. Fill up your spirit with the one and only person who will truly give you peace and joy that lasts. A peace and joy that goes beyond your circumstances, that even when life gets hard, even when things don't go your way, when there's a layoff or a death in the family or a health issue, none of that matters. You still have lasting joy and peace because he is a foundation who doesn't move and doesn't change and gives you something to secure yourself to as life rocks your world. The house you can lose. Your health can fade. That one person you love can change. And the relationship can really alter and not be the thing that you thought it was going to be. But relationship with Jesus is one thing that doesn't change. He says, I'm always with you. I'm not leaving you. I'm by your side. I go through everything with you. I'm going to be the one who fills you up when you feel dry, when you feel thirsty, when you're looking at life and you're just completely dissatisfied with where you're going and where you've been. Come to me. Don't chase all these other things that you're chasing. Come to me. I'm the only one who will satisfy your soul. And I think if we're followers of Jesus and we've been going to church for any amount of time, we know that. The problem is we forget it so quickly. We're like, yeah, I know I need Jesus, and I'm going to try these other things to try to help me. So we try some outside-the-box new solutions. We change our diet, or we go to the doctor, and maybe we get on some meds, Or maybe we say, I'm going to start yoga, or I'm going to go join a gym. These are things, if I do these different things, this will relieve the stress, relieve the feelings of dissatisfaction. This will be my fix. Jesus, please help these things to help me. And I understand there are different things that actually do physically help us, but so I'm not saying don't try these things. I am saying make Jesus first. Make following Jesus your first priority. If you're going through a season where you feel dissatisfied, like all you want for Christmas is you're chasing this one thing, and even that you're not sure if it's going to give you happiness, I'm saying make chasing Jesus your number one thing. Say every morning, I'm going to spend 5 minutes with you, Jesus, because I want more. And I'm going to be done chasing, looking for more, looking for that feeling of love from other people. I'm going to be done looking for that in stuff or in experiences. And I'm going to look for it in you. That's the message behind this woman at the well in these verses. Go to Jesus first. That's where we will find our hope and our joy and our contentment. You know, Mariah Carey was singing, All I Want for Christmas is You. And how we turn this into a sermon, as we're all creative pastors thinking about how are we going to make that into a sermon, it really is the simple bottom line. All I want for Christmas is Jesus. That's what I need. And we know it, maybe, but we need to put it deep down inside of us. And we need to remind ourselves, that's where I need to go first. I need to stop trying to draw water from all these different wells of life, and I need to go to the eternal life, the well that is in Jesus Christ in relationship with Him, relationship with God through Jesus. And I need to go there to find that thing inside me that I know is missing. I know that this makes a difference. Personally, I've been in that place where I felt dissatisfied, where I just felt frustrated, where I felt stuck. And what I found, and then you also in that moment, you start working harder to achieve more, to maybe have things go better. And then because you're working harder and you're doing more to try to make things work, you have less time for God in your day. And so you're like, put that, God, I don't have time for you today or this week or this month. And all of a sudden you just continue to feel worse and worse and worse. And when I've stopped that cycle and said, no, I'm going to make a priority every morning this week to get up and spend time reading the Bible and praying every day. I don't have the time, but I'm going to do it. And I'm going to thank God for everything He's given to me today. I'm going to thank Him for my circumstances here and now and all the blessings I have. And you know what's really what's really interesting when you do that is that you find out that God changes your perceptions and your perspectives. And all of a sudden, I don't feel thirsty again for more because I realize I have gratitude for what I have. I have gratitude for all the ways that God has blessed me. I have gratitude that I have a God that listens to my prayer, and I look back and I go, wow, God, you did make me feel a lot better here. I don't have that discontentment anymore. And all it took was spending time with Him, going to the right well to find what I was looking for. Maybe you're here today listening to this message, but perhaps you've never considered having a relationship with Jesus. But you know that the life you're living, you feel a lot like that teacher. You're chasing this thing and then that thing, and everything in it is meaningless. Yeah, it may give you some joy for a moment. It may feel really good for a week or for a month. But after a while, the feelings fade and you know something is missing. Then I encourage you to consider having a relationship with God. We understand when we read the Bible, in the very beginning, God is the one who created us as humans to be in relationship with Him. So it makes sense that if we live this life out and we are not in relationship with Him, that there's something inside our spirit that He gave us that's going to feel an ache and like something's not right and that something's missing. It makes sense that if we are built for the purpose of relationship with God through Jesus, that if we're missing that, We're going to know it somehow because we're spiritual beings with spirit inside of us. And Jesus is saying, what's happening is people who don't have Jesus are trying to fill that up by chasing after the wind. But some other people have recognized that Jesus is the only one that can fill that void in our lives. And many of us in this room who have decided to follow Christians have maybe had that experience of chasing all over, and when we found Jesus, understanding, oh, this is the one thing that satisfies. Yeah, sometimes we forget and we start that vicious cycle of chasing again, but we know ultimately we are never truly satisfied apart from having that ongoing, real, tangible, vibrant relationship with God. And so if you don't have that relationship today, I encourage you, seek after that. Think about what would it be like in my life? How would that be different if I actually had a relationship with the one who created everything? Because I'm here to tell you, I think that that can be the one thing that gives you joy and contentment and happiness in a way that you have never experienced before. Mariah Carey thought that all she needed was her husband, Tommy Mottola, but she was wrong. And you may think that all you need to make this season better is a new love in your life or better health or some shiny Christmas gift underneath your Christmas tree. But if you really believe that, then you know you're sadly mistaken. Because remember, your heart is a liar. So the next time you find yourself feeling like, if only, remember that your heart is a liar. What you think you want doesn't matter. What you need is Jesus. That's the simple truth that we just have to put down deep inside and remind ourselves. When we feel like we're chasing after this love or this position or this respect, or we're trying to put all the weight of our happiness on our parents or on our children or on our spouse, and they seem to keep letting us down, remind yourself, your heart is a liar. That's not actually what you need. What you need is to put Jesus back as the priority in your life and make him the center part of how you're living every single day. You need to come back to that basic message every single time you feel your heart wandering and let Jesus be the one who offers you true and lasting happiness long beyond this Christmas year.